Well, we conclude our show this morning with Johanna Brenner and Catherine Sammy talking about her recently published book, Axis of Hope, Iranian Women's Rights Activism Across Borders. Catherine Sammy is Assistant Professor of Gender and Sexuality Studies at the University of California, Irvine, and both Catherine and Johanna have been longtime members and contributors to the Old Mall. We're happy to have them back today, Catherine and Johanna.
Catherine Sammy, good morning. Welcome to KABU.
Good morning, Johanna. Thank you so much.
I'm so excited to be interviewing you about your new book, Axis of Hope, Iranian Women's Rights Activism Across Borders, just published this year by University of Washington Press. I thought we would start by having you talk a little bit about how you came to write this book about Iranian women rights activists.
Sure. Well, a big part of this history includes you. You and I, along with Catherine Tetrick, opened a wonderful feminist bookstore in 1993. And I had been out of college for a few years. And just through the bookstore, actually, and, you know, I mean, I considered myself an activist and scholarly person, so trying to keep up with a lot of feminist literature. And I started reading about Islamic feminism in Iran, and because my father's from Iran, I'm Iranian-American, I became extremely interested in what scholars like Liba Mir Hosseini and Valentine Mogadam were calling Islamic feminism, and just decided that that's something that I wanted to pursue in terms of my research. So the book is a kind of result of many years of thinking about questions of gender and Islam, about feminist activism both in Iran and transnationally. As someone who's done a lot of activism myself, I really am interested in thinking about the intimate and everyday labors of activism and activists, particularly as they navigate very difficult local, transnational, geopolitical circumstances. So that's part of how the book came into being. My father is from Iran. He came to the U.S. long before the revolution in the 60s and wasn't planning to stay, but met my mom, had me. And I remember growing up during the 1979 revolution, watching him watch that with great pride. So in my family, the revolution was, and my uncle, you know, was an activist in Iran. The revolution was not sort of a dirty word. Now, of course, things that have happened since the revolution are very complicated, but I have always been interested in thinking about the revolution and this post-revolutionary moment. So those are some of the reasons.
Mm. Well, it's interesting that you mention the revolution. And I should say your book really focuses on stories of women activists. The first chapter in the book focuses on a collective subject, the women active in what was called the 1 million signatures campaign. And then the other chapters tell the stories of two really remarkable women who were active in Iran, one Shireen Abadi and the other Mahbubeh Abbasgulzadeh.
Very good.
Thank you. And I think telling their stories in terms of both how they kind of do their activism and what the politics of their activism is very compelling. And one of the things that was interesting is that for many of the women who you profile, they were part of the revolution. They were part of the revolutionary generation. And it's interesting just to see how their politics evolved from out of being part of a revolution that had so much hope, but that was also very classical for those of us who were in the left in those years in terms of the kinds of thinking that went on in the revolution.
Absolutely. You know, Iran is such an incredibly rich example of exploring how is it that in these collective moments and sort of in the aftermath of these collective moments, women and others, other marginalized groups, their particular concerns get traded away for the good of the collective of the nation. And this certainly happened in Iran. So I try to explore the ways in which, through these stories, as you say, many of the women negotiated that the gains and losses of the revolution and the particular commitments that they maintained to, we might say, a post-colonial nation, but also were able to critique the repression of many post-revolutionary governments and moments that we've seen in the last 40 years. They were able to critique that and in some ways try to hold the state in all its complexity accountable to the sort of promises of the revolution. So I think the stories gave me an opportunity to explore some of those complexities, because when we think about or talk about Iran, it's often in two ways, particularly those of us who are leftist or progressive. So one is to defend it because of it's imbricated in a geopolitical structure in which it's framed as backwards and irrational and theocratic, etc. We get positioned in these places where we feel like we have to defend it, or we critique it wholly and think about things like, oh yes, we need sanctions because they can target these repressive leaders. And I wanted to tell a more complicated story about how people in Iran and outside of Iran who define themselves as part of a what I think of as a kind of beloved community of feminist activists could actually articulate a more complex politics in which they could call out the problems of their society and also resist the kinds of dangerous interventions on their behalf.
Right, exactly. And this is one of the things that you talk about, I think, so eloquently in the book, is that you want to challenge this idea that's so prevalent and still pretty widespread in the West, and particularly among even Western feminists, that Iranian women are solely or primarily victims and not agents. They're not seen as not only being capable of struggling on their own, but actually have much to teach people in the women in the West about how to think about some of these questions. And in particular, I would say, to challenge this dualism of secularism versus religion, and particularly Islam, that rationality and human rights reside with secularism, and that religion is necessarily antithetical to women's freedom.
Absolutely, yes, you're so right to pick up on the challenging dualisms, and that's one of the major dualisms I try to think through, you know, with other scholars who are doing that same kind of work, to, yes, say that this notion that rights reside in the West and in the Western subject, and that religion or culture reside in the non-Western subject, and that religion, culture, particularly these global South or non-Western cultures, are inherently backward, irrational, mm-hmm. and that secularism, democratic ideas, etc., are inherently reside in the West. And we just know this is not true. I think our current moment is teaching us all a lot of lessons about the fact that there are no natural, essential rights-bearing subjects. Rights are something that mm-hmm. we all, no matter where we are, have to continually fight for and negotiate. So I really did want to explore and really challenge that particular binary between religion and culture and rights, to look at how Iranian feminists, through their discourses, through their practices, through their campaigns, locate rights inside of their own context and really talk about and think about how they can fight for their rights, and that their societies offer them the discourses, the practices to do so, that they don't have to look elsewhere necessarily. So that's definitely one dualism that I wanted to challenge, and there are several that I think I try to challenge in the book too. One speaks to what we just talked about, this idea that you either have a anti-imperialist stand that doesn't hold your own state accountable, or that you have to intervene on behalf of Iranians in dangerous kinds of ways. So,
right.
So yeah, that that is a theme throughout the book. How do activists and citizens manage and articulate and practice these kinds of complexities?
Great. Let me take a moment here to let people know, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Old Mole Variety Hour on KBOO 90.7 FM. This is Johanna Brenner. I'm interviewing Catherine Sammy, who's author of the book, Axis of Hope. And we're talking about Iranian women's rights activism. Catherine, talk a little bit more about this point that you just made about the ways in which Iranian women's activists have been able to articulate a feminism within the context of Islam rather than as something that comes from outside of it.
Sure. Well, one of the stories in the book is kind of a case study of the 1 million signatures campaign, which emerges in 2006 after a kind of shift rightward of the state in terms of parliament and the presidency. And this campaign emerges to challenge the discriminatory legal structure in Iran. So things like laws around marriage, divorce, inheritance, citizenship, etc. And the campaign really, as I say in the book, it is in conversation with the kind of post-revolutionary state to say that, look, it doesn't make sense to have a discriminatory legal structure in a society that has improved the well-being and the life circumstances of women through higher rates of literacy. Literacy rates shot way up in the decades following the revolution because of the opening of free universities. Yes, many of those universities were Islamic universities. Nonetheless, they educated many, many women and others. People learned to read and got educations in ways they didn't in the pre-revolutionary period under the Shah. Okay. Women's fertility went from 7 point something in 1979 to around 2. So many, many circumstances and things improved for women. So this campaign argued, look, you have a society that has taken women seriously. We see women participating in education and in public life, and it doesn't make sense to have a discriminatory legal structure. So Islam is not against women's rights and women's rights in the family and women's education and women's equality. And so this campaign worked with and drew on the work and scholarship of many reform clerics who became very vocal when Khatami was president and things were a little bit more open. So worked with and drew on their ideas that there's nothing inherently patriarchal in the discourse of Islam, that this is a discursive tradition that's open to many different kinds of interpretations, and that, as many scholars argue, in all religions, that we need to recognize the flexibility of religion to accommodate contemporary circumstances. So the women in the 1 Million Signatures campaign really argued that the contemporary circumstances of women's incorporation, active incorporation into a society that was doing many good things for its citizens, needed to be reflected in law, in the family law.
Right. I was found very inspiring the ways in which they organized, that so many women participate. It was a very participatory and democratic kind of movement, I thought.
Absolutely, yeah. And this is one of the things in the book. I'm in some ways also trying to give this moment in Iran's history and sort of Iranian feminist history a kind of place in the global trend of these networked horizontal movements that are partly on the ground and partly online. So, you know, initially activists were going door to door, they were doing street theater, they were talking to their neighbors and their coworkers and trying to get a million signatures, which they would then, from that, draft a bill that they would turn into parliament to overturn some of the discriminatory laws. So yeah, it was really such an interesting campaign because it drew on some of the, you know, what we can think of as Iranian cultural modes of hospitality and collegiality and discussion to educate people and to talk to people and to think together about women's rights, and also to draw on things that people were also, in a sense, taking for granted, that yes, women's equality is an important part of a strong society that is taking care of its citizens. Right. So the practices and methods, both sort of on the ground and then online, were really interesting. And I talk in the book about the Iranians living outside of Iran who became active in the campaign because of this loose kind of horizontal structure. And we can see that structure then in, of course, you know, Occupy and the Arab uprisings, you know, Me Too, many of the movements that are both on the ground but also highly mediated.
We're almost out of time, but I did just want to mention that one of your activists, Mahbube, she was in New York City during the time of Occupy, and she established a streaming TV show there that was a feminist TV show for Iranians.
Yeah, it was a streaming television channel called Zenon TV, which means women's TV, basically. And she launched it right in the heart of the Occupy movement. And that, for me, was so moving to think about the kinds of coalitions and affiliations that she was gesturing towards in that moment. And she says at this launching that she's here to occupy space in the Occupy movement, and to bring some of the things that she learned as an activist in Iran to this movement. And I talk a lot in the book about her feeling, she was exiled from Iran at that point and feeling kind of sad and had a lot of kind of post-trauma. And it's at that moment that she feels like this connection to her fellow activists and citizens of the world. And so it was a very moving project, and she's an incredible activist.
Yeah, I loved reading about her. Well, Catherine, we're out of time, but I want to say again, thank you for being with us today. This is Johanna Brenner. I've been talking to Catherine Sammy, who's the author of Axis of Hope, Iranian Women's Rights Activism Across Borders. It's a wonderful book. And Catherine, best of luck and good fortune. I hope many, many people will read this terrific book.
Thanks so much, Johanna.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
رفتار ما با ساب دید و تفکر ماست، دید و تفکر یک انتخابه، تنها انتخابی که هر روز و هر لحظه آزادانه دست خود ماست.